being an idiot, I had safe search off and I just Googled giant inflatable butt plug.
What the f***?
No, it's okay. On this show, you can say fuck.
Tonight is going to be a real waste of a Saturday night. I'm Josh Hadley. With me is Chucky, not the killer doll, McMullen.
Sigmund Freud fighting a one-eyed penis-shaped squid.
All right,
that's
then.
That's just a little present to begin with.
All right, and we have the cat, too.
If what he just said forebodes the rest of this Saturday night, I might need another drink. Well, no time like the present.
Now, before we get into Dumbest Thing, I just want to point out something. We're not going to be talking about Ebola tonight, but I want to point out something that I noticed this week. Now, everyone's freaking out over Ebola, right? Fox Yes. News has spent the last 14 years trying to say that evolution did not happen, and they've been fighting evolution. In the last week, they have used the term evolve. They think that Ebola will evolve and mutate. So do you believe in evolution or not, Fox News? You can't do both.
Somebody on Fox News actually had that like good statement about why you shouldn't panic over Ebola. And everyone's like, I can't believe Fox News was a voice of reason. I can't believe that.
Yeah, and you know what? He probably got censured for that because I saw that too.
Yeah, they were probably like, dude, we don't calm people down. That's not how that's not how we do things around here.
I think perhaps the biggest irony of all is that no one will recognize that irony.
Go to adamandeve.com. Use the promo code WHAT to get 10, not 9, not 11, but 10 free gifts. You get 6 free DVDs. Just think about that. 6 DVDs for free. Plus you get a toy for him, a toy for her, a toy for both of you, and free U.S. shipping just for using the promo code WHAT at adamandeve.com. Now, let's get into...
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Let's keep talking about sex toys. Did you guys see Paul McCartney's giant inflatable butt plug in Paris?
Okay, it was Paul McCarthy. Different guy. Not the former Beatle.
Well, I wasn't trying to say it was the former Beatle. I mispronounced his name. Sorry.
It's an important distinction, man.
All right.
Not the guy who apparently doesn't like chicks that slow dance, but a totally different guy. And also, I was waiting to see if you were going to use that awesome segue that God gave you, and I commend you for taking it.
So, speaking of butt plugs.
Exactly.
France.
What we're talking about is, in France, they put up this giant inflatable piece of art that they're calling a Christmas tree. It's green, it's tapered with a bulbous end. And then it shrinks back, it tapers back down, and has a flared bottom. This is a giant butt plug, but they insist. McCarthy
actually called the flared bottom.
He insists it's a Christmas tree. You guys looked at the picture, right? It's a butt plug.
This is another one of those things where somebody designed something and it's supposed to be artistic, and obviously nobody had the heart to tell them, look, this doesn't look like what you think it looks like, and it looks like something terrible, and we should rethink this. There was some step that got missed where somebody down the line should have said, hey, this looks like somebody could shove this up their ass. Maybe we shouldn't put this out there in the middle of the public.
It's totally a butt plug. I think the American artist Paul McCarthy knows good and goddamn well it's a butt plug. But I want to point something out. The reason why this happened, Kat, you kind of alluded to this. People were being too polite to the artist to say, I know you were going for Christmas tree, but that goes right in the butt. people were too polite to say that. And I want to remind everyone that this happened in France. The French were too polite for something. This is a momentous day, you guys.
But then there's also the fact that I didn't see Christmas tree. I saw the photo of this before I read the article. And the photo, I just went, that's a butt plug. I don't think anyone who sees the photo of this went, Christmas tree. Did either of you?
Alas, that I saw the headline before I saw the picture, so my view was tainted.
I just think, by and large, Josh, you have probably seen more butt plugs than the average Joe.
Well, I wouldn't say just Joe, Jane too.
Yeah, I didn't mean to be gender specific, but I'd say take any 20 people off any street from all different parts of the country, and you've seen more butt plugs either in person or just in, you know, films, media than all of them combined.
Well, Also, the fact that I kind of screwed up when I was looking for an update to this story today. The day we're recording this, I'd heard that there was some damage done to the giant butt plug Christmas tree. Being an idiot, I had Safe Search off, and I just Googled giant inflatable butt plug.
That's the last mistake you'll ever make.
I probably should not have done that. I probably should have specified what I was looking for. But yeah, it turns out now the giant inflatable Christmas tree butt plug has been vandalized because apparently people don't like this. Oh, also, Paul McCarthy has been punched. Apparently he insists it's a Christmas tree, and people are violently saying it's a butt plug.
My hat goes off to him because I cannot in good conscience say he was really going for Christmas tree without a hint of irony in his soul. I still maintain that he knows it's a butt plug, and I'm applauding his commitment to the bit.
I'm going to go with what Charlie said, you know. He knows what he did. And if he's sticking to his original story, then that's just good acting on his part.
And just editorializing a little bit, I think it's fucking funny. I want you to keep up the good work.
Well, let's move from that to something pretty stupid. I worked in TV news for a while. I'm pretty sure where Cat works, they may have clauses like this, but are you guys familiar with what a non-compete clause is?
You mean cat clauses?
Well, yes. A non-compete clause says that when you sign a contract with a specific business, that if you quit or get fired, you cannot work for one of their competitors for X amount of time, usually about 2 to 3 years. In TV, that was so you couldn't work at the Fox affiliate and then quit and then go over to the NBC affiliate and start telling all the secrets you learned at the Fox affiliate. Now, that makes a little bit of sense in something like broadcasting. Does it with sandwich making? Jimmy John's is now forcing all of their employees to sign 2-year non-compete clauses with other sandwich shops.
Charlie? Or just any sort of business that makes at least 10% of its revenue from the sale of sandwiches. I think it's a little ridiculous. I don't know. I mean, I don't know that there's any real insider info about the art of sandwich making. I mean, once you get past like a bunch of stuff between pieces of bread, that's as far as you're going to take it. I don't know what Jimmy John's thinks they're protecting with this clause. I think it's a little paranoid, to be honest.
Pretty much. Like, it's two pieces of bread with some filling inside. You are, protecting what exactly? Like,
are they really sitting there saying, how does Subway get this information?
But then Subway does call their people sandwich artists.
Well, I mean, Subway's full of themselves, because they also consider their stuff kind of health food.
Yeah, and also there was a guy who made this gigantic green butt plug. He also called himself an artist.
That's true. I want to read this, though, because they spent some legalese on this. The agreement. Employee covenants and agrees that during his or her employment with the employer and for a period of 2 years after, he or she will not have any direct or indirect interest in or perform services for any business which derives more than 10% of its revenue from selling submarine, hero type, deli style, pita and or wrapped or rolled sandwiches, and which is located within 3 miles of either the Jimmy John's location in question or any other Jimmy John's sandwich shop, unquote. That's a lot of bullshit legalese right there for sandwiches, isn't it?
And you know what? It's so dumb because most of the people who are working at Jimmy John's are going to be these young kids who it's their first job. And so let's say they have a disagreement with their manager and they get fired. And oh, look, their only work experience that they've ever had is making sandwiches. And now they can't go work at a sandwich place.
Yeah, doesn't that kind of mean the whole I have experience doing this is meaningless?
Seriously, it's really unfair.
Because, like I said, a non-compete clause makes sense in something like broadcasting, where there are trade secrets, because every station is run different. I mean, you could give the satellite codes from one station to another. There's actual information you could sell, for lack of a better term. This is sandwiches. This is ridiculous. And in all honesty, I'm surprised it was Jimmy John's and not Subway. This sounds like something Subway would have done first. That's what surprised
me. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like this should have been Subway, because I like Jimmy John's well enough, you know? But
I think Subway is sort of categorized as too big to fail in their own eyes. They're going to eat themselves to death sooner or later.
Literally.
But I used to live in Tennessee. I don't know if you know this about Jimmy John's, but those motherfuckers are everywhere. Like, saying you can't work within 3 miles of a Jimmy John's is like saying, we're taking your kneecaps. They're ours now. You can't have them.
But also, did you notice that they didn't even say other sandwich places? Any business which derives more than 10% of its revenue from selling sandwiches. So right. That means, I mean, almost every business out there, it doesn't matter what kind of a restaurant you are. I mean, Fazoli's sells subs. So if you worked at a Jimmy John's, you can't work at a fucking Fazoli's? That's ridiculous.
You worked at this sub shop, but now you can't work at this Italian food place.
Because they happen to have some subs.
Because I mean, some stuff goes between two pieces of bread. You don't own that, Jimmy John's.
Yeah, I mean, this is ridiculous. I think this, I know we're making a lot of light of it. This is a scary moment, if you think about it, for the free market out there. That if you want to make sandwiches at a minimum wage, you have to sign a non-compete clause. That, honestly, all joking aside, sets a dangerous precedent for employees out there. What if McDonald's says, well, you need to sign a non-compete clause. You can't work at a Hardee's. You can't work at a Carl's Jr. You can't work at a Jack in the Box for 2 years after you've worked at McDonald's. Do you see how this can spread out of control really fast?
Because it limits your options so much. If you're working in one of these shitty fast food chains, that's what your work experience is. So by saying, hey, you're not allowed to go do this because we're worried about you passing on some trade secret that we have laws protecting, whatever, you're basically screwing your employees out of any kind of job history.
As if working at minimum wage, a slave wage job, isn't bad enough as it is.
Right, exactly.
This could also work the other way. I mean, if the employees start using it as leverage, that could lead to higher wages. Like, if there was a massive quitting, every Jimmy John's employee in the country, if they all quit tomorrow, then they can, that gives them a little bit of leverage. Then they can get a salary that would actually be worth this kind of a clause. But I mean, as it is now, they're asking for way more than they're giving. You know what I'm saying?
I just see that this could spiral out of control very fast because there is already a glut in the minimum wage market. And I think this just puts even more restrictions on people who are already taking the bottom of the barrel. It just limits them even more. I mean, like I said, we were joking about it, and it deserves to be joked about, but this could honestly impact the economy as a whole if it would move forward to other restaurants. I don't even know what the legality of that is. I mean, like in TV, you went to journalism school and all that. I don't even know if it's legal what Jimmy John's did. Can you force an employee to do that? What about if you've already been an employee? Can you force a tenured employee to do that? And if they don't, then can you fire them? This could be interesting.
Yeah, I think it'll definitely get worse before it gets better.
Kind of hungry now.
Well, then we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we've got mildly more serious crap.
And the delivery is really fast. By the time the break is over, it'll be here.
What rolls downstairs, a loner in pairs, and makes a bozzity sound? It's long, a schlong, a marvelous dong.
Everyone knows it's dildo.
What fits in a sock feels better than cock, and unlike a mound, it's slow. It vibrates a bit, feels great on your clit.
Everyone knows it's dildo.
It's dildo, it's dildo. It's big, it's fleshy, it's ripped.
It's dildo, it's dildo.
Yes, that's right, it's ripped. What fits in your cracks, some even have sacks. The penis you don't have to blow. They're not just for gays, they use double A's.
Everyone knows it's dildo.
A dildo dog, a dildo plane. Many more vibrating toys. You turn the knob, they buzz and throb, feels great in girls and boys.
Yes, that's right, folks. Dildo brand dildos aren't just for women anymore. We also make a long line of butt plugs, 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 plugs.
What makes you come and fits in your bum, some of them even can glow. A dink, in marvelous pink.
Everyone knows it's dildo.
A long fleshy tube, use oil-based lube, not just for the neighborhood hoes. For a girl on the go with no time for a boat, it makes for a perfect fellow.
They're dildos.
The sex toys that everyone likes.
They're dildos.
For gay men and even for dykes.
All right, folks, you are now in the middle of a heart attack moment, sandwiched in your what the fuck. What the fuck? And of course, we got Josh Cranky Pants Hadley here, and we're in the extra innings of Heart Attack with our conversation with David Quinn. And off the air, Dave was joking with me about, well, when I faked my death for April Fool's Day in 1998. What was your perspective on that, Dave?
Oh, man. I was not yet used to losing people the way I have in the last few years. And someone did an interview with me last year where I started talking about how we all die alone and was thinking of all the people I'd lost from my life in the last few years. It was different in 1998. I hadn't lost that many friends and colleagues, and I had felt a little spark of reconnection with you through both of us working with Brian Polito, and I felt like we were, you know, rekindling some of the early 90s feel, and I was getting a little tear in my eye saying goodbye to you in this thing that I wrote and sent into what, CBG or maybe my David Quinn forum on the Avatar site. I'm not sure what. Of course, you were a lion scumbag, but I had a tear in my eye for you.
I'm very sorry about that. You and Rick Veach had lost, I think it was his father, had just passed that same week, and Rick was upset, and Stephen Bissett was calling me at work. Everybody at work was in on the joke. My parents were in on the joke. Brian and Chaos was in on it. Everybody I worked with on a regular basis was in on it, and it went way bigger than I expected. I thought it would be a little ha-ha on the web, and then I could finally hear all the people shit-talking me out in the open. I'd finally hear it. And what
was it? Oh, I see. I see where you're going with this. You were actually surprised that people were saying we're going to miss him.
Yeah, I was shocked because you remember how hated was I back then.
People love to hate you.
Yeah, they were all over my ass in the comics press. This is around the time I did A Taste of Cherry for Danzig. So people were really upset over that story. It just was brutal. The nonstop defaming of me and the nonstop putting down. That's what my focus had been. And also, I was pretty crazy from those murder trials, from my girlfriend's murder. Yeah. So I came at the joke much differently, and it turned out to be a life-affirming moment. Did Tim ever tell you about slapping me in the face at the Detroit Motor City Con after that prank and him smacking me in the face and going, "What, Hart? You can't feel a thing. You're dead."
Oh.
You never heard that story?
No. Someday we're going to have to do It's a Wonderful Life starring Hart Fish.
We're going to be in a bar someday, Dave, and I'm going to show you the whole story of Tim just smacking me in the face and me going, "Tim, very bad idea. You need to stop slapping me, Tim." And then when I finally did crack him one, because I'm a martial arts guy, me cracking a dude in the face, different. So I cracked him a little baby one. He's like, "Oh, oh, ow." And I'm like, "That wasn't fun." "No." And we were hammered in the bar at Detroit Motor City Con, you know, that hotel in the
Nova. Oh, yeah.
Where we all were. It was a 3-day drunk for me.
Obviously, I was a reader of Faust back when it was at North Star. And then I remember when, I don't know what happened at North Star, but they just kind of went away almost seemingly
overnight.
Dan
wasn't paying them the money.
Well, all of a sudden I started seeing Faust over at Rebel Studios. And then eventually that went away and I started seeing Faust over at Avatar. How did the jump from North Star to Rebel to Avatar happen? Was it clean or what happened?
Well, we didn't really have a very large PR organization. It was basically just me sending letters out to CBG, and eventually Avatar gave me an online forum, you know, in the early days of online forums. So obviously what you're missing was just the continuity of the storytelling. Rebel never went away, but it slowed down when we did a bunch of monthlies for Avatar. That was a business decision to try to reach a bigger audience and experiment with monthly versions of Faust, which would help pay for the expensive self-published version, which is taking a long time to produce. As for North Star, yeah, Hart mentioned it. I mean,
and I was there. I mean, I was in the offices. The rock band the dummy blew his money on, I knew all those guys. I went to the shows. I remember it all. I've known Dan a long time.
I can give him a lot of credit now for discovering us and letting us do our thing, bringing in people like Hart and a guy who actually knew how to write in English, Mort Castle.
Mm-hmm. Mort was fantastic writer.
So someone could, you know, dress up and execute his vision of this company, right? Someone could put it into English and Hart could help him get it out. And, you know, all these people were helping him. If he had continued to pay us what he promised to pay us, we never would have needed to leave. But we were like, where's our money?
Dan got involved in this whole thing with a local rock band in Chicago. He became like their manager. He Beecham painted their leather jackets. I remember all these guys. We all grew up together on the south side of Chicago. So I know all this stuff from a different perspective than you, Dave, since I lived in Chicago. And I remember.
Well, we came to a con once, Hart, and Josh, you know, I'm really not trash talking the guy, but when he showed up in a brand new car, and I don't even own a car. And
his Camaro.
Our book is getting fourth printings, but we're not getting paid. It was the beginning of the end.
And if anybody wants to see the car that he's talking about, you can find it on YouTube if you look up the short film Spreading the Disease, which is a film my college roommates made when I was in college. And Dan is the bad guy, and there's footage of me kicking him in the face and putting him into a trunk.
Because I remember what struck me as a reader of Faust at the time was when the Rebel editions or the reprints of the original North Star issues came out, the striking new covers. And especially you had that one kind of fold. I think it was issue 2 or 3 where it had like half the cover was a fold in and then there was graphic nudity underneath. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool.
You guys did a great job with your fold out covers. And Tim is an amazing artist. I mean, Tim does not get the recognition he deserves. He's a super highly influential artist. And since he did not have a monthly output, people have kind of forgotten about Tim, and Tim was a fantastic artist.
If you don't have a monthly superhero book, there are plenty of people that would just assume you're dead.
Yeah.
I go back to the Thomas Jane comment and the Tim Bradstreet comment. It's like, you're still alive?
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
yeah,
and
I'm raising a family in New York.
I'm really happy to see Bradstreet working with a guy like Thomas Jane. You know, it was really good to see because we all knew each other, you know, and it's great to see where people are now. And I'm really glad to see Tim is still doing good work. And I'm really happy that Vigil is out there still doing good work. I'm glad that you're happily married and you've got a child in your life that's making you very happy. These are really cool things because we went through a lot of our struggles together.
And Tim and I are still working on new things. Mm-hmm. We never get together that we're not working on something new. Some of it takes a long time to come out, but we are working on new stories that take place within the world of Faust, as well as new things that have nothing to do with it. We're working on some stuff that'll come out for kids, and we're working on other stuff that is right down our familiar old dark alley where only, you know, the very bold can go.
And then let's talk about Avatar. How has your experience been at Avatar?
We were happy to work with them because it was definitely a kindred spirit. By us working with them, that sort of put them, raised them to a new level. And it also raised us to a new challenge of doing these monthly books. I mean, we were trying to negotiate to continue working together at the same period of time when we were considering just like distribution system has been fucked. We may have to pull way back from comics as a business.
That's a big part of why I left the comic industry is because it's very, very difficult to make any kind of a living at it. And yeah. It's very frustrating with such a small audience. You know, I did it for so long. I want new readers. I want new viewers. I want to explore new avenues. Are you interested in doing stuff in film or television, Dave?
Well, there's nothing I'm working on that I'm not really targeting all platforms. Trying to talk to people about more Faust stuff for other media. The Romero's project I mentioned earlier, that's for all media. We're talking to someone about doing some webisodes of Littlest Bitch. I mean, everything I'm working on.
I'm very keen on the Romero's. That's something I'm going to want to talk to you guys about. Because, you know, I think you forget the simple fact that I'm now a TV executive. American Horrors is the world's only true 24-hour, 365 days a year, completely uncut horror channel. FearNet's dead and gone. We're it. And we're free to watch worldwide.
We're doing very well, Dave.
In my radar as a creator I want to work with.
Well, that's great. So I'll start showing you stuff. And folks, you heard it here.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything you want to say to the folks at home? We're coming to the very end of our break here and what the fuck. So, Dave, what do you want to say before we go off?
When people ask me, what does Faust mean to you? I always come down to the ground level character, the little journalist who says reality is up for grabs in the story. And that's what I think not only creative people that make a living from what they create out of nothing, but all people should keep in mind reality's up for grabs and you're making it. So, you know, I even have a philosophy. There you go.
You know, they got that philosophy. You're given lemons, make lemonade. I'm like, well, fuck that. You know, you could jujitsu something in any direction you want. You redirect energy. Energy can be directed and redirected. And since we are creators and we are able to look at a blank white page and make something, I believe that we have a better understanding of that than your average person working at the 9-to-5 clock puncher.
I'm just smiling because both of us sound so like human positive and creative positive. And I think we might be some of the last people that the haters would expect to come out with that point of view.
I always tell people, I'm like, look, I'm the horror guy and I've been to hell and back. You motherfuckers are tourists, but I'm the real goddamn thing. And I've lived a lot of time in the fire. So when I tell you I'm the light in the darkness and I'm coming out to illuminate things and I'm here to pick you up when you're falling, I'm here to help you get back up because I'm strong and I'm successful and I'm confident in myself, and I feel good when I help people. I feel good, and I've been to hell and back, and I understand the value of that. I understand the value of the darkness, and most people are surprised to find out how positive I am in life because I have been through it. I've survived it, and so I understand how mercurial living in this world is. On that note, you guys have been listening to Heart Attack. If you guys want to find out more about what I'm up to, go to Heart Attack Radio on Twitter, also on Facebook.com/Heart Attack Radio.
Begin.
my son is over 18, so I don't have to worry about this. But, and Kat, you don't have a kid. But Charlie, you have a daughter who is the appropriate age. You are liable. A judge says you are liable for what happens, what your child posts on Facebook. What they say, you're responsible for. What do you think about that, just in general?
I agree with that 100%.
So if your daughter goes and threatens a bomb scare at her school, you're okay going to jail for her?
Yeah, if she did that, I should go to jail for that, because my daughter and I made an agreement. She had a Facebook profile for a while. At the first sight of cyberbullying, because I would go to this fucking thing every day, at the first sight of that, I would point it out to her. I said, this is it. She changed the name on the profile, then deleted it, and it was gone forever. And she was upset for a while, but I told her, when I grew up, I did all kinds of stupid shit. I set fires in the alley. I vandalized.
You've admitted on this show you've set yourself on fire for fun.
That is absolutely true. And there is no record of none of that shit, because I did not put it online. There was no internet, and I think that's a blessing in disguise. And I just explained to her, there's nothing that you need to put on the internet. And since then, she has not had a Facebook profile, and said she won't until she's 18. And because of that, because even the most vigilant stalkery parents can only monitor so far. You can only keep track of so much shit, because there's just such a constant
influx. If you have a hell spawn, they're going to do something, right?
Right. I think you should be, I think parents should be held responsible for anything that their kids do. And I don't see why online should be any different, you know?
Well, I'm just curious about how that falls under freedom of speech, because even if you are a child, you still have rights. And so I'm really curious. So your child has the freedom of speech. They can say or do whatever they want. And they're making that decision. Whether or not it's a good decision is be potentially factored into by whether or not they have good parents. I'm just curious, Charlie, about freedom of speech in context of holding people responsible for something that they did not directly do.
Well, freedom of speech, I encourage my daughter to say whatever she wants, like whatever's on her mind. But what Josh, the example that Josh had was if she, via Facebook, in fact, I don't even know how this would work, but if somehow on the internet she made a bomb threat to her school, I think I should be held responsible in a case like that. But whatever she says that is not part of a crime, like part of the committing of a crime, she should be held responsible for, and I should be judged for. Because any shitty kid you see posting just a bunch of ignorant racist bullshit, I promise you, their parents are just as shitty and ignorant.
Okay, well, how about in this case? What happened was the students, obviously being minors, we don't know their names. A couple of students got mad at a girl, so they made a fake Facebook profile for her. They used a Fat Face app to make her look obese. They made her look promiscuous, and they made her look incredibly racist, posting racist and sexually explicit things. The girl's 14, by the way. The kids probably are around the same age. This profile stayed up for 11 months. After the school was notified of this, and they claimed they punished the boys with 2 days of in-school suspension and alerted the parents. They didn't tell the parents of the girl, and then so the parents ended up suing, and it turns out that a judge said, you know what, you had two little hellspawn bastards that created this Facebook profile to specifically harass this girl. You didn't stop it for 11 months. You are now liable for... Basically, the girl who got fat-faced, her parents are able to sue the parents of these kids. I don't know where I fall on this. The kids are obviously scumbag little pieces of shit. But at the same time, the parents didn't necessarily do anything wrong. I don't think... But because, look at it like this. The parents can't sue the kids because they're minors and the kids have no assets. I think the judge is throwing the parents into the mix, because then there can be a lawsuit. There can't be a lawsuit otherwise. Or am I reading too much into it?
This is really tough, because if everything that happened went through the school, and the school didn't, I mean, the school took action that they felt to be appropriate.
Yeah, 2 days in school suspension and you don't have to take the profile down. I think that's a weak action.
It is weak. Not going to lie there, but how did they not have any kind of obligation to notify the parents of exactly what had happened? Because obviously if they didn't tell them that there was this girl that was being bullied, then they didn't fully inform the parents. And then the parents could have taken different action had they known the whole truth.
Well, no, it turned out they did inform the parents technically. They told the parents about the profile, but because the students were minors, they refused to tell the parents the names of the students, and the girl who had the fake profile made of her wasn't quite sure who it was. So you were basically told, some kids did this to your daughter, we know who it is, but we're not going to tell you, and we've dealt with it, just leave it alone.
Yeah, that is horseshit.
So then I feel like the school should be held more responsible, since they were the ones who were taking responsibility for it. They were the ones who had all of the information, whereas it sounds like each of the parents only had half of the story because they couldn't call up somebody else's mom and go, hey, look, your son is being a troll. Can you do something about this? Because they don't know who the other person is. It sounds like the school needed to be doing more.
Yeah, the whole thing could have been settled out of court. I think the school should be charged with negligent incompetence. I think the two kids that made the fake profile...
Possibly aiding and abetting as well.
Aiding and abetting, definitely, because even after everything came to light, they still would not tell the other girl's parents. That's bullshit. There's no reason for them to do that. Because they're minors, so is the victim of the crime. It's all in the context of them being a minor. I think those two kids should be charged with fraud, libel, and slander. And their parents should be responsible for whatever fines that brings about.
See, I don't necessarily—I mean, I see where you're coming from, but I don't necessarily agree with you. For instance, like a couple of years ago in Wisconsin here, they passed a truancy law where if a kid keeps skipping school, the parents will do the jail time. Part of the problem I have with that is you can only control your kid so much. There's a point where the parents have to go, fuck it, he's not going to listen to me. Why am I responsible?
Yeah, they have something like that in Colorado here. In cases like that, the parents have the option to remand custody to a juvenile correctional facility.
Well, something like that. If your kid is having that many problems with getting to school and they're not listening to you, they obviously need some outside help. Because if they don't respect you enough to listen to you, they're not going to respect the school. They need something. Could smack on the fucking face.
Is it right to send the parents to jail because they have a hellspawn?
It's right to send the parents to jail only if anything they did or did not do can be constituted as negligent parenting.
Negligence.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there gets to a point where you can't do anything, where it's like, you know what, I've done everything I can short of chaining them up in the fucking basement.
I don't think it's cut and dry. I agree with you guys there. I don't know. I just think it's a case by case basis. If
same,
it'll
same
take
case
it'll
by
take
case
a
basis.
Good judge. Yeah, all within the same case. But if a judge can recognize that these kids are doing this clearly as a result of the parent fucking up, then the parent can be held culpable. And it's up to that same judge to recognize if the parent's doing everything they can and these kids are still a piece of shit, then they need to be locked away. I think this is, it's anything having to do with minors. And if I may get biblical for a moment, the sins of the father visited upon the son. It's difficult. You know, I don't think any of these cases are cut and dry like that.
Well, then how about we go to something that I think is cut and dry. John Grisham, famous novelist.
I was hoping we would not have time for this one. This one is fucking ridiculous.
John Grisham, famous novelist. Everybody's seen the tons of movies based on his books. Well, he doesn't think old white men who look at porn should be classified as child molesters. I'm just going to quote John Grisham. We have prisons now filled with guys my age. 60-year-old white men in prison who've never harmed anybody would never touch a child. But they get online one night and started surfing around, probably had a little too much to drink or whatever, pushed the wrong buttons, went too far, and got into child porn. Unquote.
Or whatever.
Yeah, what he's basically saying is, you know, just old white guys just looking at child porn is not the same as people that would go out and diddle a kid. These people shouldn't be treated the same and shouldn't go to prison. Also note, 60-year-old white men. The fact that he brought race into this says more about this than anything else, I think.
Oh boy, This is an interesting topic. Yeah. I think, and I'm probably going to take some flack for this, but there really is, to me, a difference between people who just look at porn versus people who actually kidnap kids to fuck them. There is a difference to me. And this is just because I'm an anime fan and there's a shit ton of really, really sketchy hentai out there. And I'm very much of the, I'd rather have people looking at it, at least in terms of hentai, and animated and drawn or whatever, than people actually doing, say, something that's real children. once you are looking at real small children, some child was harmed in the process of this. May not physically harmed, but emotionally, psychologically,
definitely
fuck that
sexually.
Shit. Nobody should be looking at that shit. If that's the shit that gets you off, which I really don't feel like people have control over what gets them off, great. Go read about it in some hentai. Go do that, because nobody was actually harmed. Hentai. I don't watch it, but I'm for it, because then people don't do that shit in real life. But then you get people like this who just think, well, yeah, it's totally okay if people just look at child pornography as long as they're not actually doing it. And I think, no, it's really not okay when you get real child pornography with real children who have actually been harmed in the process of this. I don't know. Because I think there probably are people who do look at child pornography who would never actually touch a child, but that doesn't make it okay. Sorry, that was a lot of rambling. But yeah.
No, I see where you're going there. I don't agree with you, but I see what you're going. Hey, you're entitled to your opinion.
Well, I agree with Kat in that I think hentai would be a whole different thing, because if there is a line to be drawn, them not involving any actual humans, that would be
line to be drawn. I see what you did there.
See, nice. But I don't agree that people that watch child porn are completely innocent. I think they are they're creating the market that allows child pornography to exist. I think they are contributing to the abuse of a minor by purchasing a video or by watching a video and getting it and getting ad revenue for whoever posted it. You are contributing to the problem, and I think that should be a crime. There's no defense for it. You can't say, well, I'm going to do this so I don't do it in real life. No, if there's even a chance you do it in real life, just put a fucking gun to your head, pull the trigger, save lives.
Actually, according to John Grisham, there is an excuse for it. Drinking.
Yeah.
I'm going to quote from John Grisham again. He was talking about a friend of his who he thought the Canadian government just screwed over. Quoting, his drinking was out of control and he went to a website. It was labeled 16-year-old wannabe hookers or something like that. And it said 16-year-old girls. So he went there, downloaded some stuff. It was 16-year-old girls who looked 30. He shouldn't have done it. It was stupid, but it wasn't 10-year-old boys. He didn't touch anything, and God, a week later there was a knock on the door. FBI, and it was a sting set up by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police to catch people, sex offenders, and my friend went to prison for 3 years. Unquote. That is just stupefying. Well, see, he got drunk, you know? He didn't mean to look at the 16-year-old girls. He got drunk. Being drunk apparently is an excuse to John Grisham.
We're going to hear John Grisham saying, well, yeah, he didn't mean to rape that girl, but, you know, he was
she
drinking.
She looked 30.
She looked way 30. Older, and she totally wanted it. At least I think she said she wanted it. I don't know. I was pretty drunk.
He was drunk.
Drinking
I was drunk.
Drinking is not an excuse for anything.
We were all drunk. I mean, drinking just causes everything. It caused Mackenzie Phillips' sex life. It caused Mel Gibson's anti-Semitism.
Caused your daughter.
And
I don't understand this kind of thinking, especially let's go to the white thing right away, how he specifically pointed out white men. So old white men can't be pedophiles is almost what he's saying here. This is, you know, those Latinos and, you know, those blacks, those are the ones who do child porn. Actually,
yeah. What he's saying is, should there really be this many white guys in here? It's a prison, right?
Yeah. Because statistically, and obviously it's hard to get actual statistics for child porn being all underground and all, but statistically, the viewers of child porn based on arrests are 70% white people. I'm sorry, his trying to say white men shouldn't be in prison for just looking at child porn is just basically going white privilege.
Well, I don't know. I felt more like maybe he was calling out the stereotype, because when we think about, you know, child predators and people looking at child pornography, I always think of middle-aged or older white dudes. Always.
I don't know
if he was, maybe he was saying like, hey, white people shouldn't be in jail for something that, you know, like we should put black people in jail for. Or maybe he was just calling out that, yeah, this is a stereotype that exists, but why should it? Because it's true.
Yeah, if 70% of the numbers that we have are old white men, that's going to be the perception. That's going to be the face on it. This is ridiculous. I think there should be no making excuses for child porn, looking at child porn, getting drunk some night and accidentally clicking on a 16-year... You know what? You still have to search for that. You can't just accidentally stumble upon child porn. Google filters that stuff out. You can't accidentally Google a child porn site. This stuff has to be sought out. You don't accidentally get involved in child porn.
Even if you are drunk or high or whatever you're on, you make that conscious, active decision to go, I want to look at little kids. And I think if everybody said it to themselves in that way, you're like, I'm making a choice to look at minors, then you wouldn't do it.
Also the fact, 16-year-olds that look 30, age has nothing to do with appearance. A minor is a minor. I don't care if she looks 30, she's 16.
Yeah, just turn to TLC and pick a fucking show.
So I'm sorry, I have zero respect for John Grisham now. He can go get fucked. I'm one of these people that have a hard time separating the art from the artist. Like, why I will never endorse a Roman Polanski movie. Or why now, thanks to Stephen Collins, I can't enjoy Tales of the Gold Monkey or Star Trek The Motion Picture anymore. And same thing with John Grisham. Fuck you, John Grisham.
Yeah, I was a fan until today. Because I wasn't even such a big fan of his writing. I just admired how much research he put into every book. Because when I was in high school, I read the shit out of John Grisham. I read The Client, A Time to Kill, The Firm, Pelican Brief. I read all that shit. And I would like look it up and like, wow, he was right about that. I never caught him up ever since high school. And I read him every now and then, even to this day. And I considered him an authority on the law. And then he says this shit and not so much.
And he did try to backtrack. He did, whoa, let me explain. No, you said what you meant. There's no explaining that. You don't get to backtrack off that.
God, what a fucking idiot. What an idiot.
I like, think even if the you rest, think the that, rest of that quote seems like it would have been like, I'm sorry, what was the question?
Like, even if you think it, even if you believe it in your very core, don't ever say that shit in public, like, at all. You don't have to be famous or anything. You just shouldn't say that shit.
I mean, Kat, you're a sci-fi fan. Knowing what Stephen Collins did, are you able to look at Tales of the Gold Monkey or Star Trek or anything like that the same now? Anything he's done?
I have nostalgia for Star Trek. Ain't nothing gonna change that.
Can you put aside that Stephen Collins had sex with his 12-year-old babysitter when he was in his 40s numerous times? Or do you see just Commodore Decker?
I honestly do not care.
Okay, I'm one of those ones I can't separate the art from the artist. When they do something so vile, like the H.P. Lovecraft thing, just knowing the fact that he wrote the poem on the creation of niggers in 1912, I can never respect the man for that. Nothing else he does. To me, the art and the artist are the same thing. It's the same thing with John Grisham. I think John Grisham can get fucked.
I'm able to separate out the art and the artist.
That's just a difference between us. Nothing wrong with that. Just a difference.
And I can kind of feel a change in myself happening because I used to be able to do that. Like, I'll still watch a Woody Allen movie. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I mean, when you think about how much of the artist goes into the art, what the fuck are we even looking at? You know what I mean?
Well, but then you've also got stuff like Victor Silva. Victor Silva, convicted pedophile. He has made 3 or 4 movies since he got out of prison for raping a 14-year-old boy on the set of his movie Clown House. Every one of his movies is full of shirtless teenage boy characters. And I go, this is Victor Silva working out his fucking pedophilia on film. Fuck you. I will never watch a Victor Silva movie again. It's like with Roman Polanski. Roman Polanski could make the best movie ever. I will not have anything to do with it because fuck Roman Polanski.
Maybe it's the child thing, because I'm trying to think of celebrities who I have beef with, and it's always like homophobia, and it's not usually child molestation.
It might be because child molestation, I mean, homophobia is bad, but child molestation's way worse.
Yeah. So I'm like, when was the last time I thought, man, I expected better of that particular celebrity? And it was Adam Baldwin blowing up on Twitter, like with this homophobic rant. But I went to Comic-Con and got his autograph, and he was perfectly nice and lovely.
You know, when that old gypsy woman said that on this day I would be ranking the severity of hate crimes, I laughed in her face.
You didn't believe her, did you?
I did not.
On that note, where can we find Charlie?
Facebook, at Charlie McMullen on Twitter, and geekjuicemedia.com.
Where can we find Kat, the anime freak?
not watching hentai, but being for it on Twitter at LabyrinthCat and Facebook.com/NerdistCat. And on my other show, Nerd to the Third Power, over on That Guy with the Glasses under the podcast tab.
And you can find me, 1201beyond.com, 1201beyond@gmail.com to contact the show. And remember, we have t-shirts and shit, so go to 1201beyond.com. There's a store there. Buy a t-shirt.
Do it now.
Is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.